much this morning for the kind invitation. It's a real pleasure to be here. My talk will be mostly on my expertise, which is complexity, but I will try to make some connection with quantum gravity. So from the cosmic web to the connectome, networks are everywhere, and we distinguish between networks defined by nodes and links and simplicial complexes that describe the interaction between two or more nodes in the graph. And I would not be here if in the 50s there was not the idea of Roge and Penrose, which pointed out that a possible fabric of quantum space-time is a network itself. And it says, in my own view, is that ultimately physical law should find the most natural expression in terms of essentially combinatorial principle. Thus, in accordance to such a view, should emerge some form of discrete and combinatorial space-time. And actually, at present, many approach to quantum gravity use in one way or another one this discretization of space-time. Maybe for some approaches, just try to resolve some problems of renormalization, and so it's not fundamental, but they all use this this network-like structure. Here I want to be a bit erratic, and I want to put forward an idea that maybe between fundamental physics and complexity science, there can be some case for cross-fertilization. And I will just speak about probably mathematical analogies, but according to Maxwell, you know, most surprising and far-reaching analogy reveal themselves between apparently quite disparate natural processes. So we are on the way to understand if this is just mathematical similarity or there is something more deep behind that. And this is a good time to try to do this type of research project, because in this century, as Hawking predicted in 2000, there is a lot of discoveries and understanding about complex systems and biological networks. And here I want to take, you know, also to, I have been stimulated by reading the book of Lee Smalling, In the Light of the Cosmos, in which he was suggesting that a theory of quantum cosmology cannot be logically consistent if it does not describe a complex universe, and it should be a theory of self-organization. So I will give a brief description of what are the achievements done in the last 15 years in network theory in order to introduce our more recent work on network geometry. So in in complex systems, many systems are described by networks which lie in this big space between very regular lattices and complete random graph where every pair of nodes is linked with probability P. And this pattern of connection, of interaction, is considered to be very important to understand the function of the system. And it has been shown that a lot of very different networks from biology to social science display some universality class, which are scale-free networks, small world, and networks with communities. And this is a way for the system to encode information. And most importantly also, people are really stressing very strongly the interplay between this structure and dynamical system in top of this object. And so the small world networks are networks in which the typical distance goes like the logarithm of the number of nodes. These are graphs a bit like you can think about a Cayley tree, But they might contain loops. So a model has been proposed with a one-dimensional ring in which few links have been can be rewired, and just a few percentage of these links is enough to reach this small typical distance in the graph. And if you try to fit, so the number of nodes scales exponentially with the typical distance, and if we try to fit a polynomial dependence of the number of nodes on the typical distance, we find that the Hausdorff dimension in this system is infinity.
So do you have a background metric? What does distance mean?
It's a hopping distance.
L is a hopping distance also?
L is the hopping distance, yeah. And another property that has been observed in many different networks, from the internet to the World Wide Web to social networks, is that the degree distribution, so the distribution of how many links are incident to a node, follow a power law, as a tail which follows a power law. And the exponents are between 2 and 3, meaning that the average degree is finite. These are sparse graphs, so like lattices, the number of links scales like the number of nodes. But there are big hubs, nodes with importantly many connections, which makes this second moment diverge. And this region of exponent, notice that there is not just one single exponent, but a range of it, has been found in a very large class of networks. And this is a picture of the internet in which you can see the emergence of these big hubs in the structure. And actually it has been becoming clear that the structure affects the dynamics, and if you put an easing model on top of the structure, the phase diagram changes dramatically. And for the scale-free region, which is this exponent between 2 and 3, the system is always ferromagnetic. So you know, you're familiar with a network in which the easing model is always paramagnetic, and this is the 1D chain. And this is an example of a network in which the easing model is instead always ferromagnetic. And this is not just a feature of the easing model. There is a number of dynamical processes that display unusual phase diagram when put on complex networks. So there is a strong dependence of the networks on the dynamical processes. The origin of these power law networks, one of the first explanation of it is this non-equilibrium dynamics that goes under the name of Barabasian Albert, in which you have one node that arrives in the network at each time and adds m links, two links, and it adds these links to target node chosen proportionally to their degree. So the more connected is one node, the more likely it is that he receive a new link. And just these two rules, they are responsible for getting this power law of degree distribution with an exponent at 3. And if you just change the dynamics a little bit and you get rid of this preferential attachment and you have a uniform attachment, instead you have this exponential degree distribution that has a more or less standard phase diagram if you study dynamical process in top of it. So another way to generate a scale-free graph is by using Apollonian networks, which are based on an Apollonian packing in which you have an Apollonian packing of sphere, and you put the nodes at the center of the sphere and a link if the two circles are tangent to each other. And so this is a triangle in which you do an infinite set of one-three Packner move. In some sense, you can see like this. And this is a scale-free graph. And it has a structure which has been studied by mathematicians and is related to to Lorentz group.
So how is it related to Lorentz group? In what dimension?
In dimension, this two dimension.
So two dimension Lorentz group. So it is a, so this is one, two dimension.
The two generators.
Is it one space and one time? So there's only one generator for the Lorentz group?
Well, maybe we can talk about it more in detail later. So in this is a work of more than 10 years ago, but recently people have been looking at considering going a step further and considering a network geometry. So assuming that the network has an underlying geometry, continuous geometry, such that two nodes close in space are also close in this hidden geometry. And actually, when this concept has been put forward, the question was, what is the curvature of this hidden geometry? Is that hyperbolic? So that because the hyperbolic plane has this property that the tessellation has a number of nodes which is increasing exponentially with the diameter, so this is reminiscent of the small world character of networks. And actually, there is the group of Bogunya and Kriukov that have proposed a model based on a sprinkling of the node in a hyperbolic plane and linking them with a probability dependent on the distance. And they show that this model strongly affects the navigability of the graph. So another type of diffusion process which is strongly affected by the geometry and the underlying network. And so, for example, just for your, this has been, the routing algorithm for the internet that have been proposed based on these results. And furthermore, people have investigated the relation between these models and causal sets. And so in this paper, because and in this other paper instead, there is a more data analysis point of view and a citation network, which is a network which is a clear causal structure, has been studying using the method of causal set to recover the dimension, the effective dimension of the citation space. But our question is a bit different. We don't want to start by imposing that a node live in an embedding space. We want to have a model of emergent geometry. And then we want to ask the question, is that possible that hyperbolic geometry is an emergent property of a network evolution which follows dynamical rules that make no use of this geometry? And so we took simplicial complexes that are known to be ideal objects to study discrete geometry, and as such, they're quite widely used in quantum gravity, as you know. And we take also a non-equilibrium approach. We have seen that growing networks describe the emergence of scale-free degree distribution complex property. Would growing simplicial complex describe the emergence of geometry? And so we take a warm-up example. We start by choosing triangles, and we glue triangles along the links with a constraint that at most M triangles, every link is incident to at most M triangles with M greater than 1.
So these are in two dimensions?
Two dimensions. So we call links saturated and unsaturated. They are saturated if they're incident exactly to M triangles, and unsaturated if they're incident to less than M triangles, and this is the figure for M equal to 2. And we consider two processes. Process A that we call, so we choose an unsaturated link and we glue a triangle to it. So this is the simplicial complex and this is the network that results. And our process B, so we take two unsaturated links at distance and two nodes at distance 2, and we put a link between them and we close all the triangle that this link closes as long as this is allowed. So as long as every link is incident to less than M triangles.
Now, normally in quantum gravity and so on, one considers the network to be dual to the simplicial complex.
Mm-hmm.
Here, somehow from the diagram, it looks like
yes.
The network is a simplicial complex.
We will just work with the simplicial complex.
Could one get a situation where that line would have to pass through the network? Like you can.
Sorry.
Is it always possible to continue this process, or is it? Like I can imagine that there'd be an unsaturated link, but you couldn't draw the line without crossing something, or.
Well, we put the line only if this is allowed.
Okay.
And our model is that we start with an initial triangle. At each time, for sure, process A takes place, and process B takes place only with probability strictly less than one. And what are the structure that we get? So for m equal to 2, we get manifolds, which are small world in the sense that the boundary scale, like the volume, and the color here indicates the community, so more densely connected region, and they are with exponential degree distribution. For m equal to infinity, we get a scale-free graph, because when we add a link a triangle uniformly to every link, we end up putting a new link to a node proportional to how many links it already has. So every node is attached to is incident to k links. All these links can receive a triangle, so this gives a preferential attachment mechanism. And we can, using the master equation approach, we can calculate the degree distribution exactly for p equal to 0. And then we can do the exercise of calculating the local curvature associated to the node, assuming that a triangle are isocelous. So this is simply 6 minus ki or 4 minus ki if the node is at the boundary, meaning that if there are 3 triangles and 4 links, the sum of the angle is 180 and the curvature is 0. So if we know the degree distribution, then we know the curvature distribution. And these graphs are all both planar. The average curvature is 1 over n because they follow Gasparian theorem. But there are fluctuations of the curvature. And here the fluctuations are bounded, although this this exponential negative tail, and here are unbounded. So this is infinite distribution of the curvature, infinite fluctuation of the curvature. And the Laplacian matrix has a spectrum that reveals a given spectral dimension, and we can see that for m equal to 2, the spectral dimension is exactly 2, and then it seems to, this is numerical results, it seems to saturate for larger value of m. So, but then we look at higher dimensional simplicial complexes. So not only working with triangles, but with link and triangles and tetrahedra and so on. And of course, the constraint to have a manifold will be always that the d minus 1 phase is incident at most to 2 d-dimensional simplices. And we define the generalized degree. The generalized degree is the number of d-dimensional simplices adjacent to the phase. So for example, take the node 3. The node 3 is adjacent to 4 triangles, so the generalized degree is 4. Take the link 1, 3 is incident to 3 triangles, so the generalized degree is 3. And then we use a convenient variable, which is the incident number, which is the generalized degree of the d minus 1 phase minus 1. So that for manifolds, the n alpha will take only value 0, 1, because we have this constraint that the d minus 1 phase is incident at most to 2 dimensional simplices. And we define a model in which we start with a d-dimensional simplex, and we use only process A. So at each time, we choose a d minus one phase with a probability p alpha, and we glue a new d-dimensional simplex to it. And this probability depends on the flavor, which is a variable which takes values minus one, zero, and one. So let's look more closely at this probability. If s is equal to minus one, I can attach to a phase only if n alpha is equal to zero. So I will have a manifold, and n alpha is equal to zero or one. If s is equal to zero, I attach to every phase with equal probability, and I have uniform attachment. If I have s equal to one, I have a generalized preferential attachment. And the network that we get are in d dimension are what we teach to the students that study complexity at a university. So we have for s equal to minus one a chain with uniform preferential uniform attachment. We have an exponential tree. For preferential attachment, we have a scale-free tree. What happens in d equal to two? Well, in d equal to two, with uniform attachment, we already have a scale-free graph because we have this mechanism that if we attach a triangle to every link with uniform probability, we end up adding more links to nodes which already have more links. And the manifold, well, the manifold at this point will become exponential and a small world. And in d equal to three, instead, also the manifold becomes scale-free. And this is because if I have a node I, which is incident to three tetrahedra, you see the number of phases, it is incident two, is five at this moment. But when I add the new tetrahedra, it becomes six. So the more tetrahedra I add, the more likely I am to so there is an emergent effective preferential attachment to the node. And we can derive this distribution analytically using the master equation approach, and they only depend on S plus this parameter, flavor plus dimension. And we can also calculate the distribution of the generalized degree, which follow this very regular pattern. So for preferential attachment, they are always power law, scale-free. For s equal to zero, the d minus one is phases follow a generalized degree distribution, which is exponential, and these are power law. And for the manifold, we have binomial, exponential, and power law for different dimensionality of the phase. So this follow this theory follow perfectly with the simulation result. So what is the Hausdorff dimension of this object? Well, it's infinity because these are small worlds. So and you can also consider an area of this object which scales like the number of nodes. And this area is the number of phases that have this n alpha equal to zero that are incident just to one d-dimensional simplex. And the spectral dimension, well, the spectral dimension of the manifold is surprisingly very, there is a very good fit of the spectral dimension with the dimension itself of the simplicial complexes. So this model of simplicial complex in d dimension has a spectral dimension d exactly equal to d. And but here I did not tell you about this emergent geometry which I was talking about at the introduction. So we can see that if all the links have equal length, it's not possible to embed this graph in an Euclidean space. So we thought it could be nice to embed it in a hyperbolic space. And actually, if all the links have equal distance, we can put all the nodes at the ideal point in a Poincaré disk, and we get this very regular structure. So as you see here, this is apparent that the dual of this structure is a tree, because you put a node at every triangle, the dual is a tree. But actually, the simplicial complex has signature of complexity that, of course, they are not present in the dual, in the tree. And in three dimension, we can put this into three-dimensional space. And it's interesting because in three-dimensional space, then we can take all these ideal points at the boundary and project them in angular coordinates. And we see that the network that results is this Apollonian graph I was telling you at the beginning of the talk. So, because of course this is the simplicial complex is this three-dimensional object that can be projected in two dimensions, getting this structure. But here I want to tell you also about a further modification we have made to this model. And we have attributed to the nodes some intrinsic quantity that we call energy from a G epsilon distribution. And we don't just assign energy to the node, but also to the links and to the face and to every face of the simplicial complexes. And it's very simple. The energy of the link is the sum of the energy of the two nodes incident to it. The energy of the face is the sum of the energy of the three node incident to the face. And for historic reason, we call this Boltzmann factor the fitness, because these models are also inspired by biological evolution. And we changed the model by changing the probability to attach a new d-dimensional simplices to the d-1 phase. And we change this probability by just modulating it and adding a multiplical factor, which is this fitness factor here. So when beta equal to 0, all we can attach this simplicial complex to every phase with this rule that is independent on the energy. And when beta is equal to infinity, we have a kind of a streamer dynamics that we choose the phases with lower energy that are available. And we can do a statistical mechanics of this object, because these are, since the dual is a tree-like, the history, in particular, this is done for the manifold, the history of the manifold is just determined by the label of the phase that we choose up to time t. And so the probability of this choosing the phase given the energy of the nodes is just the product of the probability to choose all of these phases. And we can write it in this way. So there is mu that is a self-consistent quantity, but this exponential part only depends on n. And here we have this n factorial term. And the energy takes the shape of this shape, sum of alpha, of epsilon alpha and alpha, where alpha are the d-1 phases. And actually, we can do something more, because not only we can determine the probability of a given history up to time t, but we can calculate the probability of a given network up to time t. And this is different because a given network can be realized by different history where the different phases are chosen, always causally, but at different with a different time sequence. And if we count for all these different relabeling of the tree, we see that the probability of a graph becomes independent, or here there is a E missing, independent on this, we get rid of this n factorial at the bottom. And therefore, given this probability, we can calculate the entropy of this probability, the Shannon entropy of starting from this probability, and we see that the entropy, which calculates the number of possible graphs that we explore, in some sense, the logarithm of the typical graph that we explore, this change in entropy is proportional just to the change in energy and the change of on the number of nodes. The energy is extensive, but the change in the number of nodes is also proportional to the change of the area, because we have this this small wall property that the number of nodes scale like the area of the graph. So we have a kind of a generalized area law for this kind of system where n is proportional to v. And actually, this is a calculation that we have done before thinking of the hyperbolic embedding. So if you assume that the simplices instead are just flat, then you can relate this energy of the node to the Rege curvature associated to the d minus 2 phases. And actually, you can rewrite this energy in this term, where now the energy becomes a sum over the d minus 2 phase of a product between the energy of the d minus 2 phase and the Rege curvature minus a constant per meter. So here I want to tell you about one limit of these networks, and the limit s equal to 1, d equal to 1. This is the case in which you have a graph that grows by the addition of new links, and the probability to attach a new link to a node is going like proportional to the degree of the node and this fitness factor of the node. And this model we studied more than 15 years ago. We show that the degree with Laszlo Barabasi, and we show that the degree minus 1 of the node of energy epsilon follow Bose-Einstein statistics. And actually, this is true for small enough temperature, because for high enough temperature corresponding to the temperature at which we have the Bose-Einstein condensation, in the graph there is a phase transition in which there is one node which grabs a finite fraction of all the links. So one question coming back to the network with network geometry with flavor is, what would be the effect of flavor and dimensionality on the emergence of these quantum statistics? And then our result was that the generalized degree of the delta phase minus 1 over delta phase of energy epsilon follows this very regular pattern. So for here, for network with preferential attachment, and if you look at the d minus 1 phase, you have a Bose-Einstein condensation. This is the model we have studied in 2001. But if you generalize this network with preferential the simplicial complex with preferential attachment to higher dimension, you find that all the delta phase have this property that the generalized degree minus one follow the Bose-Einstein distribution. For flavor s equal to zero, instead, we have that the d minus one phase follow the Boltzmann distribution, and the d minus two and d minus three phases follow the Bose-Einstein distribution. For the manifold, it's very interesting because we see that the d minus one phase follow the Fermi, the d minus two the Boltzmann, and the d minus three the Bose-Einstein distribution. And so this is this for this reason we also call these objects complex quantum network manifold, and they have this property that the generalized degree follow the Fermi Dirac Boltzmann Bose-Einstein distribution respectively for triangular phase links and nodes. So this is the results of the simulation results compared with the theory, which is very good, until we reach a low enough temperature at which we have a phase transition. So in order to show you the evidence for this phase transition, this is the case of this simplex in d equal to 2 and high enough temperature. And then when we cool it, it chooses a direction and only grow in that direction. And the same happens in three dimensions when you have a quite homogeneous distribution of point at high temperature, and then when we cool it, it chooses one direction. So I realized I was very fast, but I reached my conclusion. So I wanted to show you recent work we have been doing on a model of simplicial complexes and that we call network geometry with flavor. And we show that we can recover by this non-equilibrium dynamics a non-trivial distribution of the curvature, a strong dependence of the dimensionality and the emergence of these phases in which the graphs are scale-free. So, and this emergent preferential attachment that occurs as an effect of poor effect of the dimensionality, and the fact that actually it seems that this structure have a real natural emergent hyperbolic geometry. And then I show you some result of this network geometry with flavor at finite temperature, so with the fitness and energy of the phases. And this network have generalized degree following the Fermi-Dirac, Boltzmann, and Bose-Einstein distribution, depending on the dimensionality of the delta phase and the flavor S. And they can go phase transition that strongly affect this hyperbolic geometry. So this is work has been done mainly in collaboration with Christophe Ramede, and the early steps were done with Xiao Wu and Giulia Menichetti that we were visiting my group. And this is a list of papers. Yes, this is the most complete paper that we wrote. This is the new one in which there is this hyperbolic embedding, let's say, or emergent geometry. And this is an interesting paper, I think, for an introduction and a kind of view so there's a link of the literature is a review article on the topic. Thank you for your attention.
So I'm interested in the quantum distribution functions and the quantum statistics. You're not saying that quantum physics somehow emerged. There's no quantum mechanics in these. You're doing averaging over ordinary probability, but you still get quantum distribution functions for the null degree. Is that right?
Yes, I think if I wanted to be very conservative here, yes, and so our results are classical, so this is a classical dynamics, but actually respect, you know, I compare this result with the one that I had 15 years ago on the network with preferential attachment. And respect to that, now we have some variable which are these incident numbers, which are 0, 1. So, so based on that, we started thinking about mapping these models to some quantum dynamics, a bit like in a quantum graffiti paper and things like that. But I think that mapping can, in some sense, work very well for the d-1 phases, because you can describe, you can map this n alpha to a quantum fermionic occupation number, and so the average of an alpha on the graph reflects the fact that in this mapping this is fermionic. But this mapping is so I'm not totally satisfied with this mapping, because we don't get the statistics for the other delta phase. I would be more happy if we could map these networks to a quantum network state in which every phase corresponds to the right statistics.
The mapping says that the node degree is like an occupation number.
Yes.
Just trying to get you to see carefully what the result is. So if you start with a quantum distribution, that's for an occupation number, say for fermions, popping on lattice. And instead, since you have an ensemble of graphs, the thing that corresponds to the occupation number is the node degree, the number of edges in the node.
Well, but is this well, I don't have it here, but so this generalized degree minus one for the d minus one phase is exactly this. This n alpha, generalized degree minus one. So this quantity 0, 1 that we map to an occupation of a fermionic quantum of a fermionic state. And I cannot say this is a project that has been successful in showing that this graph have a quantum counterpart, but maybe you can give a look, more careful look to that. And
okay, well, there's a lot to discuss here. And what is the emergent hyperbolic geometry? Everything you did, you went by very fast. So you have a graph, and for certain graphs, you embed the graph in hyperbolic geometry, where the nodes of the graph come from critical points of the hyperbolic geometry. That's what it looks like. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so we, in some sense, we choose all the distance equal, and the node, all ideal nodes, so that this model that we are describing is exactly this kind of.
So I think I understood the statement about embedding. That's fine.
Is assuming
why
that
is there any or critical point of, I mean, hyperbolic geometry.
No, I'm just indicating my lack of understanding.
Okay.
So
because it seems to me that the hyperbolic geometry, just homogeneous isotropic, there cannot be preferred points there. So one is just embedding a graph.
Yes, yes. In fact,
it's not a unique embedding. It is a. I mean, you could take this embedding and apply map on it on any isometry, move all those points, and so it's not. There's nothing critical about it. I can map any one point to any other point since the whole thing is very homogeneous, right?
Yeah. You can apply isometry.
So the mapping. I'm just looking for the zero point.
Right. Me too.
The mapping in the picture, you've taken a graph which is in red, put the nodes on the boundary of a hyperbolic geometry, and every link has length one. And the beauty of a hyperbolic geometry is you can have a lot of edges that all have the same length. Am I making any sense?
Sorry, yes.
The graph is embedded, geodesics in the hyperbolic geometry of length one are links in the graph.
Yeah. Well, length infinity, I think. Mm-hmm.
Length infinity, I'm sorry, I mean that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so length infinity, so. So is it, what properties does a graph have to have that has such an embedding, or will the graph always have such an embedding?
So for example, the other people that I cited have a different approach to this hyperbolic embedding, no? But here, what we want to have an object with in which, in some sense, which reproduce the dynamics that we are studying, and there are no crossing, because in the model that I proposed, you see these figures.
Right. So the graph is a plane of that.
Here. So here there are a lot of crossing. I don't know if you can see, but this picture is an hyperbolic embedding, but with a lot of lot of crossing.
Yeah. So you're looking at the embedding without any crossings. And
well, or you could say I look at the simplex that is curved by itself.
So this question is, what can I look at a graph and tell that this can be embedded in the way you want to be, you want it to embed it?
This is a very hot research topic in network. So there has been a lot of discussion about this. So there is this idea of Gromov curvature or... So this is not what we are doing, but there has been a lot of discussion about characterizing the hyperbolicity of network using Gromov curvature, for example, or other definition of curvature that...
Okay, so I'm continuing along your line, because
okay.
I also want to understand, but please stop me that. So what we're trying to understand is this relation between the graphs and the geometry.
Mm-hmm.
So if I understood it well now, what you just explained is that we are just considering the graphs which can be embedded in a hyperbolic geometry with certain properties.
Mm-hmm.
That is the set that you're considering. Is that correct, Mr. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or you just say, what happens if I build? Because I don't like embeddings.
Okay.
So what happens if I build my network with simplicial complexes that are ideal and they're ideal in this way.
So that are what?
That are ideal. No? So it's and my constraint is that I want length to be of equal length, because if I have equal length, I cannot embed any graph I generate with a flat simplices in Euclidean geometry. I can only embed it in hyperbolic. So better if I start with simplices which are hyperbolic from the beginning. And what are the structures that I get from this?
Okay, so you're looking at this the simple graphs, that, as you say, which are no crossings, right? That's the
mm-hmm.
And the lengths are, they have the same hopping length.
Yes.
Okay, so I get this class. And now, what is the result? The result mm-hmm. is that this graph can always be embedded in the hyperbolic geometry, or what is the embedding result?
Well, no, I speak about my model. I don't speak in general. No.
Yeah, your model.
Yeah. So my model has this tree-like structure.
They're trees.
The dual is a tree.
So it's plane that can be embedded in a two-dimensional surface. A property of a tree is you can always make the tree collapse.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sorry, these seem very elementary, but we have to go through
them.
Okay, so you have a graph whose dual is a tree, and therefore it can be embedded in a two-dimensional surface without crossing.
Yeah, the Euler characteristic, yes, is one always, yes.
Okay, good. And then, moreover, you can choose to embed your trees in a hyperbolic manifold with the nodes on the edges and the legs on the inside, preserving the no crossing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, then for that particular model, then, this is the simplest model. So, is that the model for which you had the distribution function with a certain energy and?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, after I embed it, can I see any property of that energy?
Well, you know, when you have this this. When you have this phase transition, in some sense, yes. So here, the colors indicate the energies. So here, the color indicate the energy. So here, we are at the high temperature. So the color don't have any. They are quite uncorrelated. But at high temperature. At low temperature, you try the network grows toward the direction in which there are low energy.
Yeah. So what does it mean in terms of the geometry that I'm embedding in it? Because we want to think of this as some prescription. Some simplicities or some graphs. That you like, and you have a model from them
mm-hmm.
as to which tells you some distribution, right, in terms of these two parameters, beta and mu.
Mm-hmm.
And now, given any such distribution from there, we would like to think that one is building a macroscopic geometry. In other words, we would like to think that your graphs is a microscopic description approximate geometry. Is that at all possible, or is that something that you don't think is compatible?
No, it would be very beautiful. We started to work on this 1 year ago, so there is still a lot of things
so,
to explore.
So your emphasis is not looking at this geometry, this hyperbolic geometry, or embedding at all. Your emphasis is just to look at the graph and the simplicial decomposition by itself. Is that it? I mean, simplicial manifold by itself, not looking at emergence of a continuum geometry.
No, but how would you describe the transition from this to this?
Right.
there is something happen in the geometry,
there will
no?
There will be some phase in which there will be continuum geometry, right?
Yes.
It will not be in all phases.
Yes.
So one would say that there will be some phase in the or gravity, one would say that there is a phase in which the geometries are crumpled, and therefore there is no macroscopic description.
Okay.
And if you want to have a semi-classical description, people here are much more expert than I am.
No, yeah, yes, yes. So here we always get this, maybe an interesting from your point of view, geometry, because they are complex, no? So this is because they are complex structure with these scale-free properties on things that usually, I mean, I think fundamental scientists don't want to look at. But my idea is that to come here was to show you that actually these exotic phases are not so exotic, that we have a lot of understanding about this scale-free graph, and there is a lot that can be done on this because people have studied critical phenomena, studied many different features, and so maybe this is not the region of geometry that are interesting for fundamental physics. Maybe it's the some opposite limit in some sense, because if you see here, this is something that reminds us. So, because if you see here, this energy can be in some sense connected, widely speaking. You don't have the volume here, but it could be connected with Rege action. But here we have a minus. This is more importantly. So we are exploring a region that may be some kind of opposite limit to something that is interesting for fundamental physics, but in some sense, I think is can be maybe stimulating.
So, like, if you have a region and you perturb one of the nodes in it, and there will be some propagation away from this region, does it take away the energy? And how this propagation? What kind of wave this perturbation? And also that, like.
So you want to change the energy.
Region.
Yes. So yeah, I think that if you put with end an energy which is particularly low, you can trigger this phase transition in some sense, because you can trigger the fact that the network wants to grow in that direction. So, but we have not explored this. Yes, this is something that is interesting. But here, so yes. So it might be that one perturbation has a dramatic effect. Yeah, if it's strong enough.
So, may I ask you a question? I need to ask you a second question again. There's a term that dynamical systems people use, which is damage. You're growing at this network. And if at one point you have a degree of freedom which you choose differently, you choose a different value of the energy, and you see, when you grow that, and you see the difference between the two networks having made a change at one point, that's the domain of damage, and it's in some sense the causal future of that event.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you study or could study?
Yes, we could study at least with simulations. Because these analytical approaches are all based on, you know, stationary states, so do not in equilibrium, like, yes, stationary state. So you must have an ensemble. So you don't have you must not have something that you are putting there exogenously. But actually, for example, in the original model that I was working with, Laszlo Barabási, 2001, people have done something similar. So maybe it can be done. Just put there one, so a distribution of energy, and then one node, which is, maybe it can be done. What's analytically, I don't know.
Also, I want to ask, is there some situation of some condition of the network such that this energy would be just a boundary term, does not depend on the fog of the region?
Yes, this means that, so this means that you sum all only on the bulk, because the only terms that contribute is when n alpha is equal to 1, not when n alpha is equal to 0. N alpha equal to 0 is the boundary. N alpha is equal to 1 is the bulk.
So this is always the bulk.
So this is always the bulk. But you can, there is an energy associated to the surface, which will be the opposite. Because here, everything is, in some sense, so you have the bulk and the surface, and there is an interplay between them. There is a kind of choice at each time to what is at the boundary and what is at the bulk.
So I think we can thank Ginestra again.